All right, take your Bibles and let's turn, please, to Proverbs, and we'll be in chapter 12 this evening. Proverbs chapter 12, we may very well get into 13 as well. If we have too much time, we may get into 14. We'll just see how far we go. But that's one of the nice things about Proverbs is that it doesn't have a long context, so it's able to be stopped at basically any point. We're going to look starting at verse number 27. Number 27, and we'll go from there. It says, the slothful, you know, that's a lazy individual. The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting. Can you imagine a person being so lazy that he doesn't bother to get whatever he captured or killed cooked so that he can get it eaten? Anyway, he's too lazy to cook what he's hunted and killed. He's not diligent in taking care of things in his life. By contrast, the substance of a diligent man is precious. Whatever he has, he takes care of. He regards it as highly valued. You could say it this way. If a person has a car and doesn't bother to take care of it, there's something that's not very diligent about that. The person that is in business for himself and is not diligent in taking care that things are done right, including the billing that he needs to send out, something is going to take place in his business. I remember dealing with, we were still renting a home at that time, but dealing with a man who was in the heating and air conditioning business, and he wouldn't bill for about a year after his work. Well, it seems to me that he must have had either a lot of money or else his business was just not well cared for. I can't imagine somebody doing work for me and not sending me a bill sooner than that. But that's the way he did it. It wasn't my bill to worry about. It was my landlord's. And his attitude was, well, the money's in the bank earning interest for me. He can have it when he wants it, when he sends a bill. But can you imagine such a thing? But diligence. We saw a lot of farmers who were going broke, but their equipment was never ready to use. We saw other farmers who were very good at managing, and when the ground was ready, they were in the fields with their equipment because they had it ready during the winter months. The guy that doesn't take care of his car can expect it to break down at any moment. Now, any car can break down. We understand that. But the one who has taken care of his car is far less likely to have a major problem come unexpectedly. The slothful man, it doesn't pay to be lazy. It does pay to be diligent. You know, sometimes people are lazy when it comes to studying their Bibles too. They just never quite get around to doing it. But the person who is diligent in managing himself, you know, that's where management comes in. It's not just managing other things, it's managing oneself. If you can't manage yourself, you won't manage your time. If you can't manage yourself, you won't manage your business. If you can't manage yourself, you won't manage to get your Bible study read either. You understand how that goes. In the way of righteousness is life. Righteous living results in God's blessings in this life. And God's blessings in this life make for a good life. We who have been saved a number of years have learned to live our lives for the Lord, and God blesses us beyond measure. You understand that, and I understand that. And in the pathway thereof, there is no death. Righteous living does not lead to death. Now, that's not to say that righteous people don't die, but that is to say that unrighteous people and their lifestyle might bring death on them far sooner than if they were living faithfully for the Lord. Now, of course, this is a general truth. Sometimes righteous living has indeed resulted in people being martyred for their Christian faith. Their lives are an embarrassment to the unsaved crowd, and sometimes they have actually been put to death. As an example, Jesus was crucified, and he lived a righteous life, and we all understand that. We move over into chapter number 13 this time, and we see in verse number 1 that a wise son heareth his father's instruction. Now, he doesn't just hear it. He hears it, and he obeys it. Now, I don't think there was ever a time when I told my sons to do something that they didn't hear it. But that doesn't mean they heeded it. They heard it, all right, because my voice was loud enough that they couldn't help but hear it. But selective hearing is like failing to heed. When you don't do what you're told, and your father's the one that told you, it doesn't make for a wise son. The wise son would cooperate, because if the father is wise and the leader he should be, the son will wish he had heeded what the dad has said. But a scorner, remember now, a scorner is the same thing as a scoffer or a mocker. He heareth not rebuke. He does not listen to rebuke. He doesn't heed it. He doesn't pay attention to it. Now, rebuke doesn't have to be a bad thing. This one is unteachable. If you've ever been involved in teaching, you'll know that some students know everything and they really are unteachable. They know more than the teacher, and if you don't think so, ask them. They'll be glad to share that bit of information from their wise, their vast store of wisdom. But a person who doesn't pay attention to correction when the correction is offered is not going to learn. Take math for instance. Part of learning how to do things in math is making mistakes and getting the wrong answer. But when you get the teacher to show you how to do it correctly, then what happens is that the next time the thought is you should be able to do it correctly. But if you're not paying attention to him when he's explaining it to you, you're not going to benefit from his effort. Now, I've tried to help some, and while I'm trying to show them something, instead of looking where I'm pointing, they're looking out the window. Why do I waste my time with it? You see, unteachable actually characterizes a lot of people when it comes to spiritual things. Their minds are made up. They don't want to be confused with the facts. And so they don't listen, and they don't like to be told that they're wrong. Now, I can understand that somebody doesn't like to be told that he's wrong, but if he's wrong, he's wrong. And if you're paying him to do a job and he's not doing it right, it would seem to me it would be to his financial advantage and to his longevity on that job to pay attention and do it right. Otherwise, if I'm his boss, he's out of here. You understand how that goes. A man shall eat good by the fruit of his mouth. Now, the idea of by the fruit of his mouth speaks of what he says with his mouth. In other words, he will be helpful to others. This person is going to be blessed because what he says will come back on him. And what he says has been good and helpful, and that's the sort of response that people are going to give to him. He is going to benefit as a result of the things that he says. But then there's the soul of the transgressors, and the word here is the treacherous. They shall eat violence. Now, I don't know how violence would taste, but I'm sure that it's not something I would want. But the idea is, as a result of the words he speaks, he brings trouble on himself. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. He brings violence on himself and others around him because of things he said. How many squabbles have started because of what somebody said and somebody else took exception to? Neither one can walk away from it. But if they would either one walk away, you know, one would consider the source, oh, that's just what's his face. He's that way, just let it go in one ear and out the other. Or if old what's his bucket would say something instead that would be kind and sweet instead of something that's sharp and bitter that stirs up trouble, what a blessing it would be. You wouldn't have these problems. But people with their mouths bring all kinds of problems upon themselves. We have to be very careful there. You know, in witnessing, one of the things we should never do is violate courtesy with somebody. We should always be kind and courteous. We recognize that somebody may reject what we have to say, but there is no reason to pressure them or to argue with them. It's not just too infrequent that on our do not call number, you know, we have one of those, we get somebody that's soliciting for some money. And you say, no, at least that's what I say. Only it's really definite when I say it, no. And pretty soon they start trying to urge me on. Wrong approach. I didn't want this call in the first place. That's why I'm on a do not call list. And when they called and then they don't know enough to take no for an answer, I say, thank you, you have a nice day, and I hang the phone up. Now, they can be fortunate that that's all I've said to them, because that's not necessarily what my thoughts were, okay? Get off the phone, you jerk. I really don't want solicitations on the telephone. I despise them. And so if somebody wants to get me to give them some money, that's not the approach that's going to work. I don't like it. I'm sure you've had enough of those too. You know, it's almost to the point where we aren't going to answer our phone during the supper hour from 5 to 7 p.m. Let it go on the answering machine. So if it's one of you, you be sure and speak up, because we're probably there listening to find out whether this is some salesman or somebody soliciting for something, or whether it's one of our church people that's in dire distress. He that keepeth, meaning he that guards his mouth, keepeth his life. Sometimes people bring death on themselves by what gets said. He that keepeth or guards his mouth keeps his life. By the words he speaks, he keeps out of trouble. He will be careful about what he says, and what he says will return on him and will not bring him into trouble. We need to guard what we say. Don't insult me. It's just not the right approach. But I have people that think that they're going to move me to do something for them because they insult me. That's a tactic that's dumb, at best, maybe even worse than that. But he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. Sometimes people really bring lots of trouble on themselves by what they say. If they hadn't said what they said, using the words that they used, in the tone in which it was said, in the attitude with which it was said, they wouldn't bring such trouble on themselves. But people say things they should not say. They say them in a manner they should not say them, and they use words that are loaded, and they should not use those kinds of words. But when they do, they bring trouble on others and also on themselves. That verse is basically saying the same thing as the previous verse. We see in verse number 4, the soul of the sluggard. Now, sluggard is not somebody that hits a lot of home runs in baseball. He is a slugger, but not a sluggard. A sluggard is a lazy person. The soul of the sluggard desireth. He craves things. He has cravings. But his cravings are not satisfied. He's lazy. You know, the best thing that you can do for somebody who's lazy is not bail him out, but let him go hungry. If a man will not work, let him not eat. If he chooses not to take enough action to earn some food for himself, let him be hungry. It'll be a good lesson for him. But if you bail him out when he acts like that, you're not helping him. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. He does not get what he desires. But the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. And there you go. You can claim that as a life verse and show how diligent you are, especially if you're a bit overweight, okay? Obviously, it must be because you're so diligent. That's one of those that ranks right up there with the soul that trusteth in the Lord shall be made fat, okay? It doesn't mean obese. It means he will be abundantly satisfied. It means that his desires will be realized. But that's one you can have some fun with. So be careful who you say it to, however, okay? You don't want to say it to the wrong person, lest it ceases to be fun. I can say it up here because there's absolutely nobody here that's overweight. Yes, I know. Okay. A righteous man hateth lying. Now, why does a righteous man hate lying? It's because God hates lying. Isn't that interesting? I don't think I've ever heard so many lying politicians as I have in recent months, maybe the last several years. Maybe they've been there all along and I just have been asleep instead of listening to them. But it's come down to the point where if it's a politician, I don't care which side of the aisle he's on, I don't trust him. And I'm sure that there's got to be at least one or two in our state legislatures or our federal government that don't lie. But the truth is valuable. And if the American public feels like it's being lied to, they need to do something about that. A righteous man hates lying, but a wicked man is loathsome. It means he causes to stink. That's the literal meaning of the words. He's loathsome and makes ashamed. He comes to shame. The righteous detest falsehood, but the wicked cause shame. Now, with the comparison of the two statements, how do you suppose the wicked is loathsome and comes to shame? Is it by being less than truthful? Could be. You see the parallelism here, and it's a contrast, but the contrast would suggest that that's one of the ways in which a wicked person might be loathsome. When you lose trust for somebody, you don't want to put your trust in that person again. Righteousness keepeth him that is upright in the way. If somebody is righteous in the way he goes or in the way he lives, righteousness guards him or protects him. Now consider, you have a definite desire to be honest and truthful as a saved person. So when a situation comes up where it's an uncomfortable answer, you either tell the truth or you lie. What is your righteous character going to have you do? It's going to tell the truth. Okay? You understand? Your righteous character or your righteous nature is going to lead you to do what is right in whatever situation you find yourself in. However, the person who is not a saved person, who has not got integrity, who will tell the person whatever he wants to hear, he's not going to be guarded or protected by something he doesn't have. But wickedness overthroweth or ruins the sinner. Just like righteousness protects somebody, wickedness amplifies the sinfulness of the individual involved. So people act in accordance with their character, and their character is going to be somewhat determined by whether they're saved or whether they're not saved. Now, somebody may be putting on a false front for the benefit of his audience. However, when you see this person in action when he doesn't realize you're watching, you get a pretty good idea of his character. You understand how that is. These guys that get talking with their microphones on and get caught. Listen, it's not intelligent. Turn the microphone off before you start to talk. Or better yet, don't say anything that couldn't go out on the microphone. Let people hear what you said, and you'll know that it's an acceptable thing. But righteousness has a tendency to go in one way, and wickedness has a tendency to go in the other way. The righteousness will protect the person who is upright or righteous, and the wickedness will cause the downfall of the other person. There is, I'm in verse 7 now, there is that maketh himself rich. Somebody pretends to be rich, or somebody adopts a rich lifestyle. Now, this is probably speaking of somebody who is not rich. You wouldn't have to pretend to be rich if you were rich. And if you aren't rich, you better not adopt a rich lifestyle. You can't afford it. Can't afford it. Maybe the lifestyle you're trying to live now, and it's not necessarily a rich one. Yet, this person hath nothing. Then there is that maketh himself or pretends to be poor, meaning materially poor, but he has great riches. he maybe lives below where he could live if he chose to live differently. He may have loads of money, but drive an old pickup truck. He may just choose not to waste his money on many things. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having an old pickup truck or a new pickup truck. You can have whatever kind of pickup truck you want. And if you don't want one, you don't have to have one of them either. The idea is that you can't always tell what that person is by looking. Some people put on quite the front, and yet they must owe a lot of money at the bank based on what they seem to have purchased. And other people are content to live on a level less than they could if they chose to. Could it be that maybe there's somebody that is not trying to demonstrate himself to be anything but has great spiritual riches? Could be. Then we go on into verse number 8. The ransom of a man's life are his riches. And the idea seems to be that if somebody is threatened and he thinks he's got enough money, he, you know, pay this ransom and we'll let you go. That's the idea. His riches might buy his way out of some awkward situation. Maybe his child gets kidnapped, and so there's a big ransom. You pay the ransom, we'll let the kid go. Well, the rich man can maybe afford to do that. But the poor heareth not rebuke. It doesn't matter what the person says. He can't pay it anyway. It doesn't matter if his life is threatened. Go ahead and take it. I can't afford what you're talking about. Or if, you know, they wouldn't even bother to kidnap his child. There's no way they can get any money out of him if they understand that. Now, this is something that's becoming problematic in places. The ransom of a man's life are his riches, but the poor heareth not rebuke. He doesn't have to listen to a threat because he can't do anything about it anyhow. The light, suggesting the life of the righteous, rejoiceth. It burns brightly. He's blessed by God. God will reward him with a blessed life. And all you have to do is look no farther than at God, how God has blessed your life, and see that God has rewarded you for the way in which you have lived. But the lamp, suggesting again, the life of the wicked shall be put out, meaning shall be extinguished. He is not going to be rewarded with a blessed life. I don't know how it would be to be an unsaved individual, except that I observe them. Because I've been a saved person for nearly all of my life. And God has done a tremendous work in my life over the years. And I would consider myself to have been well rewarded with a very blessed life. But I've seen others who just don't have the same sort of blessings that you and I have enjoyed as a result of our having been saved early on in life and having been kept out of a lot of sin. Only by pride, that's verse number 10, cometh contention. Only by pride, by presumption, by arrogance comes quarreling. Whenever two people are involved in a knock-down, drag-out quarrel, there's pride involved. Neither one can back down. But with the well-advised, those who are willing to receive advice or counsel, not only to receive it, but to learn from it and take the advice. With those people, there is wisdom, because in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. You know, sometimes we learn the hard way, and we make mistakes, when if we had just asked some people who would be knowledgeable, what do you think about such and such a thing, they might have shared some insight with us as to why we should not do what we're thinking about doing. I remember we had a number of faculty offices in a row, and there were certain ones that would come for advice. And I might be third in line or fourth in line, depending on which end they started at. I was kind of in the middle. What were they looking for? Most of the time that I recall, it was not advice, it was approval. So they would keep asking and keep asking, and they were not deterred by, don't do this, it's not a good idea, until they found somebody that would say, that's a great idea, go ahead and do it. And then it didn't matter what the rest said, his idea was approved, and this was suddenly God's will for his life. If you want advice, seek it. If you want approval, go to somebody besides me. I'll be honest with you. If it's a bad idea, I hope you could trust me to tell you that it's not a good idea, and here's why. You understand? Advice is to be sought. You don't need anybody's approval but God's. Make sure, and that's what our kids do too. They try this. They go from mom to dad, back to mom, trying to get approval, not to get advice. They've got their minds made up, especially when they get a little older. They think they've got the easy touch. Our kids used to think that I was the hard one, when in reality, my wife was the hard one. If they'd come to me, I'd have said yes. They went to her. That was the end of it. Didn't matter whether it's a motorcycle or a gun or whatever it was. They finally figured out that I was the easier touch, but they were getting up to the point where it's time to leave home. They always try. Only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Wealth gotten by vanity, by worthlessness, by some means other than by hard work, shall be diminished. The person who is too young when he receives a large inheritance is liable to waste it, because he hasn't learned to manage responsibly. My father used to tell me, when I consider a purchase, stop and think how many hours it would take you to work to earn the money that's going to cost you, and then ask yourself if it's worth it. Let's see. When I was first married, I could buy a new car for $1,700 with no trade-in. But at $1.10 an hour, that would take quite a few hours to earn, wouldn't it? That was the end of that thought. No new one for me. His advice might encourage me not to waste my money on something. Wealth gotten by vanity may result in a person not appreciating its value if he didn't have to work to earn the money to pay for it. it shall be diminished. But he that gathereth by labor, he that goes out and with hard work earns his money, his wealth, it would seem, if he and his wealth together would increase, because he's learned the value of it. We need to be diligent. We need to be paying attention and not wasting the means that God gives us. Well, that's as far as we're going to go this evening. I'm going to mark it right there, Lord willing. We will start at verse number 12 next week, and you that are gone will have to catch us on the internet. Okay? Well, let's pray.